every single time you sit down at your computer or, you know, pick up your phone, you are making hundreds of these subconscious calculations about trust.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like you see a little padlock icon in your browser URL bar, you just trust it.
Right.
Or a screen asks you to click all the images with a fire hydrant. You assume it's just a standard security check.
Right, it's just muscle memory at this point.
Exactly. And you look at a system file and see it's officially digitally signed by Microsoft. You trust it completely.
Well, we have to, right? I mean, we rely on those visual and technical cues to navigate the digital world.
Yeah.
If we didn't have those shortcuts, we would just be paralyzed, like manually verifying every single line of code before we clicked a link or opened an email. It's just not possible.
But the scary thing is, those exact markers of safety are being hijacked. So welcome to your Cyber Mornings Daily Briefing for Thursday, July 9, 2026.
Glad to be here.
For this deep dive, we are stripping away the fluff to bring you the critical takeaways from today's threat landscape. We're looking at three major stories today, and they all share this this very chilling underlying theme.
Yeah, the weaponization of our subconscious trust.
Exactly. We're going to explore how attackers are bypassing modern defenses by subverting the very things we inherently trust, like from the core of your operating system to human verification screens, all the way to everyday utility software.
And the tactics across these three campaigns are completely different. Like, we're looking at kernel-level manipulation, AI-generated social engineering, and massive global proxy networks.
It's a lot.
It is. But the end goal is identical across the board, gaining absolute control by convincing you or your computer that the danger is actually a trusted friend.
So let's jump right into the core of the machine. The Threat Hunter team from Symantec, which is a part of Broadcom now, they just flagged a new ransomware family called Goddamn.
Yeah, quite the name.
Right. First spotted publicly this past May 21st, 2026, to be exact. And it's actually a rebrand of a previous ransomware, Codebeast, which itself evolved from this Delphi-based monster ransomware back in 2022.
Right, the known lineage.
Yeah. And the developer, who researchers track as Hyadina, is doing something completely wild. They are using what's called a BYOVD attack.
Bring your own vulnerable driver.
Bring your own vulnerable driver, exactly. I've heard the acronym, but let's break down what that actually means for a real-world system.
Sure. So think of your computer's operating system like a fortress. Most of the programs you run, you know, your web browser, email client, even some security tools, they operate in the outer courtyard.
Okay.
This is called user mode. They have very limited permissions. But the inner keep, like the absolute most privileged area, is called the kernel.
The VIP section.
Exactly. To get into the kernel, a piece of software needs a special pass, usually in the form of a digital signature, proving it is a legitimate, safe driver for a piece of hardware or core software.
Right. So a driver is basically the translator between the software and the hardware, and Microsoft signs off on them.
Normally, yes. But a BYOVD attack flips this entirely. Attackers know they can't just inject their own code straight into the kernel, because modern Windows systems will just block unsigned code outright.
So what do?
They scour the internet for old, legitimate drivers. Like maybe a driver for a 10-year-old graphics card or some defunct anti-cheat software. Something that has a known security flaw, but still holds a valid digital signature.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. They bring that vulnerable driver onto your machine, install it using the valid signature, and then exploit the flaw in that driver to sneak their own malicious code into the kernel.
So it's like finding a security guard who still has an active badge but is known to take bribes.
That is a perfect analogy, actually.
You bring him to the building, he badges in, and then you just pay him to open the back door for you.
Exactly. But here is the terrifying twist with this Hyadina group and their goddamn ransomware. They drop a kernel driver called PoisonX, or GE11.sys. But this driver isn't just an old, vulnerable piece of software they found lying around.
Right.
Symantec discovered that PoisonX is a purely malicious driver that the developers somehow successfully got signed by Microsoft.
Wait. I have to stop you there. How does a literal ransomware developer get Microsoft to officially sign their malicious driver?
I know, it sounds impossible.
Doesn't that defeat the entire purpose of cryptographic digital signatures? Like, how is this technically even possible?
It completely shatters the whole sign equal safe paradigm. As for the mechanics of how they do it, threat actors have a few methods. They don't usually hack Microsoft directly. Right?
Okay, so is it a workaround?
Yeah, they exploit the pipeline.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes they steal legitimate cryptographic certificates from legitimate software development companies.
Ah, supply chain stuff.
Exactly. Other times, they create dummy shell companies, pass the initial automated vetting processes in the Windows Hardware Developer Program, and submit their malicious drivers wrapped in layers of obfuscation.
So the automated scanners just don't catch the malware.
Exactly. And by the time human analysts realize what happened, the driver already has the official Microsoft stamp of approval. And we've seen this used by other groups too, like the Gentleman Ransomware as a Service with their Gentle Killer tool.
It's nuts. So they basically con the DMV into issuing a real driver's license for a completely fake identity.
That's exactly it.
And once they have that Microsoft Sign a Poison X driver loaded into the kernel, what do they actually do with it? Like, what's the goal?
They blind the system.
Yeah.
Once you are in the kernel, you have higher privileges than the antivirus or endpoint detection and response software defending the machine.
Oh, no.
Yeah. The Poison X driver just systematically attacks those security tools.
Yeah.
Sometimes it forcefully kills the security processes.
Just shuts them down entirely.
Yep. But often, it's much more insidious than that. It might just strip the security agent of the underlying permissions it needs to function.
So the security software thinks it's still running normally.
Yes, exactly. The icon in your system tray is still green. The dashboard says everything is totally fine, but the security system is completely deaf and blind.
That is terrifying.
It is. The driver tampers directly with the kernel's internal event logs, meaning the EDR never receives the notifications about files being accessed or network connections being made.
That is incredibly stealthy. So the system thinks everything is fine, the user thinks everything is fine, and meanwhile, this credential harvesting toolkit, which is based on Nearsoft tools, by the way, it's just grabbing everything.
Everything. Web browsers, Windows Credential Manager, VNC sessions, email clients, even Wi-Fi profiles.
Yeah, and Hyadena is using tools like PSESEC, which, you know, is normally a legitimate tool system administrators use to manage remote computers. They're using it to move laterally across the entire corporate network.
Which is very hard to detect if you aren't looking closely.
Right. They set up AnyDesk for remote access, and they use pre-staged PowerShell scripts, so that if you reboot the machine, their access just survives.
Yep, persistence.
Symantec actually watched them do this across 10 different hosts in one organization in a single day. And then boom, ransomware deployed, files encrypted with a .got8dam extension, or sometimes they just use the victim's name, which they did back on June 3rd. And then they extort you via email or the Qualtalks app.
Which brings us to the real practical takeaway here. If you manage a network, or if you're a system administrator listening to this deep dive right now, this fundamentally alters your threat model.
How so?
You cannot rely solely on the green check marks on your endpoint security dashboard anymore. You have to monitor for behavioral anomalies.
Right, the actual activity on the network.
Exactly. If you see PSSEGs firing off in ways it normally doesn't, or any desk suddenly spinning up across multiple machines that have no business running it, you have to investigate.
Yeah.
The attackers have figured out how to make your security tools lie to you.
That is a very unsettling reality to wake up to. But let's shift gears a bit. We just talked about tricking the machine's core into trusting a malicious file. Our second story is about tricking the human operator into actively doing the attacker's job for them.
Yeah, and this involves a cluster of activity discovered by Elastic Security Labs. They call the group REF6045. And they are targeting banking, fintech, and crypto users down in Mexico.
And the crazy part is how they got caught. The only reason researchers got such a deep look at this is because the threat actors made a massive operational security mistake.
Oh, that was a huge unforced error.
Yeah. They left a server directory completely open and exposed to the public internet at IP68.211.161.46, just allowing researchers to casually download the entire back end of their operation.
It's rare you get a look under the hood like that.
Definitely. And what Elastic found was this highly orchestrated campaign built entirely around manipulating human psychology. Like, picture this, you're browsing the web, maybe trying to access a financial forum, and you get hit with a capped TCH.
Click all the images containing a fire hydrant.
Exactly. We have all done this a million times.
It's pure muscle memory at this point.
Right. You solve the puzzle because you just want to get to your destination. But once you complete it, the page doesn't just let you through. Instead, it displays a message giving you very specific instructions to copy a string of text, open your Windows Run dialog box, and paste it in.
They call this a click fix lure.
Now, any IT professional would see a website asking you to paste code into your run dialog and immediately run for the hills.
Oh, absolutely. Red sirens everywhere.
But for an average user who is just frustrated and trying to prove they aren't a robot, the visual authority of the CAPECHA works. They just trust the process.
They do. They follow the instructions, paste the command, hit enter, and unknowingly execute a malicious script.
And what happens next is pure theater. That script immediately launches your Edge web browser in kiosk mode, meaning it takes over your entire screen, hiding your taskbar and your close buttons.
Total lock-in.
Yeah, and it points it to a domain called fakeupdate.net, which looks identical to a legitimate Windows update screen.
And this is where the psychological trap snaps shut. That fake update screen isn't actually doing anything. It's just a distraction to keep you sitting in your chair.
Buying time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
While you're sitting there waiting for your computer to supposedly update, the script running in the background checks if it has administrator privileges. If it doesn't, it triggers a Windows user account control prompt.
You know, that box that pops up asking, do you want to allow this app to make changes to your device?
Right. And it doesn't just ask once. Elastic found, it prompts the user every 20 seconds, relentlessly.
Just pestering you.
It just pesters you until you break.
Okay.
You assume it's part of the update, so you click yes just to make it go away.
Mm-hmm.
And the moment you do, the script locks your mouse movement.
Wow.
You're physically trapped, staring at a fake percentage bar while the real malware downloads in the background.
And the payload it downloads is this incredibly robust modular PowerShell toolkit dubbed SCM Banker. It dates back to October 2025, and it acts as a master launcher for several parallel attacks.
Yeah, it's heavily segmented.
Like, there's a master VB script called run.vbs that launches a bunch of PowerShell scripts. One module, abs.ps1, downloads a remote utilities, RAT, which essentially gives the attacker a live steering wheel to control your mouse and keyboard remotely.
And then there's clip.ps1, which hijacks your Windows clipboard.
This one blew my mind. Explain how the clipboard hijack actually works in practice.
So it constantly monitors what you copy and paste. If you copy a standard CLADE number, which is a Mexican bank routing number, or a credit card string, the malware instantly intercepts that action.
It's just watching silently.
Exactly. When you go to paste the number into a payment field, it secretly swaps out your intended account number for the attacker's account number.
Yep.
You think you're paying your mortgage, but the money is routed directly to the threat actor.
And it somehow gets worse. They have another module, jujuskazi.ps1, that takes a screenshot and logs your keystrokes every single time a window pops up, matching a list of Mexican financial institutions.
It's incredibly targeted.
And they even have a module for fake vishing overlays, meaning it generates fake security pop-ups on your screen, telling you your account is compromised and urging you to call a specific phone number.
Yeah, the mensaj1.ps1 script.
Right. And when you call, you are routed straight to a call center run by the scammers. And all of this is managed through a redirect site that uses Telegram to notify the operator whenever they get a bite.
It's an entire ecosystem designed for total financial takeover. But there's a fascinating detail in the SCM banker code that reveals a lot about the modern cybercrime economy.
Oh, the AI stuff.
Yes. Elastic noted that the back-end code shows heavy, undeniable signs of being written with an AI coding assistant, like Copilot or Cursor, using Spanish prompts.
Right. The researchers called it a split personality. In the code, you have these beautifully structured, cleanly named functions sitting right next to completely butchered, hand-shortened variables and leftover AI generation artifacts.
Mess, really.
They even left prompt-like instructions right above the code snippets, exactly like what you see when someone relies heavily on those AI tools.
It really highlights that the barrier to entry for complex malware development has completely plummeted. But it also raises an interesting paradox.
And that's exactly what I want to push back on. Like, if the back end is this duct-taped, hastily stitched together AI-generated script, why is it working?
It's a fair question.
Like, it's like a cheap Hollywood movie set.
Uh-huh.
From the front, the fake Windows update looks perfect, but behind the cardboard cutout, shouldn't poorly written, copy-pasted malware just crash or fail? Why are researchers seeing actual victims on live dashboards falling for this?
Because in social engineering, technical sophistication matters far less than psychological sophistication. The underlying code might be crude, but the user experience of the attack is flawless. The fatigue of the UAC prompts popping up every 20 seconds, the visual authority of the fake update screen, the muscle memory of the KBTCHA.
So it just wears them down.
Exactly. It manipulates the user perfectly.
Yeah.
The victim is reduced to a passive feed. The operators just sit back, watch their Telegram notifications, and manually trigger those remote access tools or fake pop-ups whenever a high-value target logs into their bank.
Which means our approach to defense has to change immediately. If you are running security awareness training for your organization, this is your wake-up call.
100%.
We have spent a decade drilling people on how to spot a phishing email or a bad URL. We now need to update that training. Users need to understand that if a CAPTCHA or a website ever asks you to copy code and paste it into a run dialogue, that is an immediate glaring red flag. It goes way beyond just spotting bad emails now.
Absolutely. So we've covered exploiting the operating system's trust with Microsoft signatures and exploiting the user's visual trust with fake keycap TCHAs.
Yeah. Our final story looks at threat actors who are weaponizing the trust we place in everyday utility software. And what's unique here is that these attackers aren't actually trying to steal your banking credentials.
No, they don't want your money directly. They want to harvest your device's identity to build a global illicit business.
This brings us to a threat actor dubbed Lurking Lizard. Threat intelligence firm Infoblox just published a deep dive into this China-based group, which has been operating a massive residential proxy business since August 2022.
That's a long time to stay under the radar.
It really is. Now, when most people hear the word proxy, they think of a service you pay for to hide your IP address, maybe to watch a streaming service from another country.
Right. A proxy essentially acts as a middleman for your internet traffic.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a critical difference between a data center proxy and a residential proxy.
Okay, break that down for us.
So data center IP addresses, like those from Amazon Web Services or Google Cloud, are very easy for security filters and banks to spot and block. They know humans don't live in a server farm.
Right.
But residential proxy routes traffic through the IP address of a real, everyday home user on a standard residential internet connection.
And because it comes from a normal home router, the traffic looks completely benign to security filters.
Exactly. Now, there are legitimate uses for this, like a global brand checking how their local advertisements display in different geographic regions. But there is a massive, highly lucrative dark market for residential proxies.
Because cybercriminals want to look like regular people.
Yes. They buy access to these networks to conduct credential stuffing attacks, you know, testing millions of stolen passwords against banking sites or for massive ad fraud campaigns, because the traffic looks like it's coming from thousands of innocent families rather than a single hacker's server.
But to build a network like that, Lurking Lizard needs millions of innocent devices to route the traffic through. And how are they getting them? By tricking you into installing their proxy software disguised as trusted apps.
Yeah, the scale is staggering.
Infoblox found they are using over 230 lookalike domains, and they use a technique called drop catching.
Which is a fascinating logistical operation. When a legitimate software company forgets to renew their website domain or it expires, Lurking Lizard uses automated bots to buy that domain the very second it drops. Yeah, so they inherit all the good reputation and search engine rankings of the previous owner.
Or they just rely on people typing too fast. Like, instead of the legitimate 7zip.org, they host their malware on 7zip.com.
A classic typo-squatting move.
Yeah. They offer Trojanized versions of the 7-Zip installer, fake WhatsApp applications, and tools claiming to be TikTok downloaders. And it's not just desktop software either.
Right, the mobile side is huge.
The latest evolution of this campaign involves a free Android app called WireVPN Fast Unlimited Proxy. It's developed by an entity called Wiley Network. And get this, that app has over 1 million downloads on major platforms.
Yeah, that is a massive footprint. And once a user downloads that fake 7-Zip or that free VPN, the app actually does exactly what it promised. It unzips your files or gives you a free VPN connection.
So the user suspects nothing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But silently, in the background, your device is turned into a proxy exit node.
It's literally like discovering your house has secretly been listed as an Airbnb. Like strangers are using your living room for shady activities, routing their illicit digital traffic through your home router, and someone else is collecting the rent while you sleep.
That's exactly what's happening.
But I have to ask for the people downloading a free app like WireVPN, are they actually victims here? Like,
yeah.
We all know the old adage, if you aren't paying for the product, you are the product.
True.
Is this just the unspoken, accepted cost of using a quote-unquote free, unlimited proxy service?
That's the logical assumption a lot of people make, but the scale and deception here move it firmly into victimhood. Infoblox highlights that this isn't just a simple malware campaign. This is an end-to-end business-to-business enterprise mimicking the malvertising lifecycle.
Meaning they treat it like a real corporation.
Yes. Lurking Lizard manages the entire lifecycle. They acquire the victim devices through malicious search engine optimization. Then they monetize that pool of infected devices by reselling the traffic under fake proxy brand names.
Oh, like impersonating IPedia, Smart Proxy, IP Royal, 9/11 Proxy.
Exactly. They even set up fake independent review sites to drive traffic to their own scam storefronts. It's a complete vertically integrated shadow economy.
And the risk to the everyday user whose device is hijacked is very real. Just a few days prior to this report, Google actually announced they had to intervene and degrade a similar network called NetNut.
Oh, the NetNut takedown, yeah.
That network had infected over 2 million devices. And they didn't even do it through fake 7-zip downloads. They did it using hidden SDKs or software development kits.
Right. So SDKs are basically pre-packaged blocks of code that developers use to quickly add features to their apps, like analytics or monetization.
Like plug-and-play code.
Exactly. The threat actors build a malicious SDK and paid legitimate app developers to include it in their apps. This instantly turned millions of users into proxy nodes without the app developers even fully understanding what the code was doing.
So if your device gets swept up in one of these networks, your digital reputation is effectively being commodified and sold to the highest bidder.
It really is.
Like, if a cybercriminal buys access from Lurking Lizard and uses your IP address as a launchpad to hack a bank or conduct credit card fraud, your legitimate home internet traffic is going to get flagged as suspicious.
You'll end up on blacklists.
Exactly. You could find your IP blacklisted by major websites, or your internet service provider might just block your connection entirely for violating their terms of service, and you would have absolutely no idea why you suddenly can't log into your email.
And it all routes back to that initial subconscious calculation we discussed at the start of the briefing. You trust that downloading a simple file archiver is a mundane task.
Yeah.
You trust that a CAPTCHA is just checking if you're a human. You trust that a Microsoft signature means a kernel driver is completely safe.
And in all three cases we covered today, threat actors have meticulously studied those assumptions and engineered ways to bypass them. Hyadena exploits the cryptographic trust of Microsoft's signature process to completely blind the kernel. The group behind SCM Banker exploits human visual trust and psychological fatigue to trick users into executing AI-assisted banking trojans. And Lurking Lizard exploits the trust in ubiquitous software brands to quietly turn everyday devices into the infrastructure of global cybercrime.
Which leaves us with a critical question about the future of our digital infrastructure. I want to leave you with a chilling concept to ponder, specifically regarding those proxy networks like Lurking Lizard and NetNut.
Let's hear it.
In the NetNut case, Google noted that millions of the compromised devices weren't just standard computers or mobile phones. They were smart TVs and streaming boxes.
Oh, man. Devices that are essentially black boxes to the average consumer. You just plug them in, connect them to the Wi-Fi, and never look at a security dashboard for them.
Precisely. As we race to connect every single home appliance to the internet, prioritizing convenience over security, we have to step back and look at the bigger picture.
Are we unwittingly building the ultimate untraceable backbone for global cybercrime right in our own living rooms?
Exactly. The next massive botnet might not be built on compromised servers. It might be hidden entirely behind the blinking lights of our smart refrigerators and living room televisions.
A terrifying thought to end on, but that is exactly why we do these briefings. We have to deeply understand the mechanics of the deception if we want any chance of defending against it.
Couldn't agree more.
So that concludes your Cyber Mornings Daily Deep Dive for today. Thank you for joining us to get thoroughly informed without the fluff. And as always, the next time you see a green check mark or a padlock icon, stay curious and stay critical.